sitting at 80 right now in downtown Butler. They said we were going to have a high of 78, so I guess we can check that off the list and keep on moving, because I don't know how high we'll get, but 80 right now in Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank studios. Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. Dave Malarkey's up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us, and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn, and it's a book talk day today. This is something we do once a month on the fourth Monday of the month in cooperation with the library system of Butler County. And the various public libraries take turns, select a book that we can discuss and talk about, and it's been great fun over the years. North Trails Library here today in the person of Kathy Klein, and you've selected a good history book to discuss this month.
Yeah, well, I kind of like history, and although this isn't local, we have some, you know, local ties and connections to the main character in this book, and I always enjoy reading about characters and things that happen locally.
Well, the title of the book is The First Conspiracy, subtitled The Secret Plot to Kill George Washington. The authors are two, actually, Brad Meltzer and Josh Mintz. A little bit more about them later on. I never read anything in my history books when I was in high school about a secret plot to kill George Washington. Did you ever hear about that?
No, I didn't either. That's why whenever this was published and come out, and of course when I saw Brad Meltzer's name attached to it, I thought, oh, what's this all about? Because, not that I'm a real TV buff, but I know that Brad Meltzer has a TV series called Decoded.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched it several times, because what he does do is he himself is a big, you know, history buff, and he goes and he kind of decodes a lot of these mysteries or theories or conspiracy theories, and he just kind of tears them apart and say, okay, what was this really all about? And so when I saw his name attached to it, and certainly it's a nonfiction, which means that, you know, he's done the research, the facts in it, or he's got documents to back it up. And I started reading the reviews, and I thought, oh, okay, we need to get this and put this in the collection.
Well, it's an interesting book, although I'm not sure. They certainly exaggerate a little bit. I mean, you know, that subtitle, The Secret Plot to Kill George Washington, from what I've been able to discover in some other sources, there may have been a plot to kidnap George Washington and turn him over to the British, which is not quite as sensational as assassinating him.
And I think somewhere in the book they mention that, and they're not sure because of some testimony as to one of the, we'll say, kidnappers, whether it was to really kidnap him or to kill him. But as you said, the secret plot to kill George Washington is more of a, we'll say, eye catcher than it is just to kidnap him.
Well, that always worries me, though, because I think, what are you trying to get my attention here for? And number two, this is 200 plus years ago. You mean to tell me that nobody ever discovered this until a novelist by the name of Brad Meltzer came upon it? I just find that a little bit hard to believe.
Well, I think there's probably a lot out there in in history that hasn't been discovered yet. I think it depends on certainly the goal, the purpose of what the author is looking for. And I think sometimes whenever we read history, I do think sometimes it's romanticized.
No question. And certainly whenever we were in high school, it was. But, I mean, I just think of probably more books written about George Washington than any other president, maybe with the exception of Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln, yeah.
But, you know, this has been reviewed by historians, by writers over a couple of centuries. And I just find it a little difficult to believe that novelist could come across this.
Well, and I guess certainly Meltzer is a novelist. I suppose in my mind I never really saw him as your traditional novelist that does a fictional story. And it could be because of just of watching his, you know, Decoded series and others, but he has written other novels. I don't personally read the novels. I go to him for some nonfiction work.
Well, the co-author of this book, Josh Minch, has done some documentaries for, you know, for National Geographic and so on. You know, I find that PBS a little bit more reliable than the History Channel, which I kind of laugh at sometimes, and their recreations of history when they have those actors and their period garb and so on and so forth. I am not familiar with his work, and I have never read anything by Brad Meltzer, although I understand his novels, his thrillers, are New York Times bestsellers.
Yes, he's got a following, absolutely. But like I said, I don't typically read his fictional works. I have a tendency when I want to really read history, you know, I go to the nonfiction, to those who have done the research. And now a lot of your nonfiction that's written today is written in a novel style. It's more enjoyable reading than
it is. Well, that's what Meltzer does here.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
This whole book is actually written in the present tense, which is kind of bizarre when you're reading about George Washington.
I did think that was a little quirky because, you know, if you really didn't keep your mind in the game as to what you were reading about, you could think this is something that was just happening now or 10 years ago or whatever, you know.
Well, he makes it read like a novel, and he's a novelist after all, so.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's what he wanted to do to draw interest, you know, that's fine. Yeah. Now, there were plots early in the American Revolution.
Yes.
And there was a guy hanged, a guy by the name of Thomas Hickey.
Yes.
The Hickey plot. I'd seen that mentioned in history books on occasion. But to stretch it as far as, you know, this blazing headline, the secret plot to kill George Washington, that may have gone a little bit too far. There's a little bit of speculation here.
Yeah,
now, again, there was a Thomas Hickey, and in fact, he was hanged.
He was.
For treason and sedition. But he was never charged with trying to kill George Washington.
No, he was not. I think that some of what is in this book, maybe I had forgotten from a history class, but I don't remember them going into detail on conspiracies and, you know, stuff like that in history class and going into the detail. And like you said, I'm sure when he did his research that he probably found snippets of different things, you know, and I would think, you know, as a writer, he was trying to connect the dots. And as you said, that could be very well where he connected. Maybe those dots shouldn't have been connected so neatly.
Well, the story starts out, actually, it's a bit of a flashback, because it starts out with the hanging of the aforementioned Tom Hickey. But then it quickly, because that took place in 1776, actually, it was just a few weeks before the Declaration of Independence was signed that this guy was hanged. And then it jumps back to 1752,
to
a much younger George Washington.
Yeah, it actually starts with the, I think, the death of George's half-brother.
Yeah, he had an older half-brother named Lawrence.
Yes, and I think what I liked about this particular book is not just the conspiracy and what was going on even 1775 and with the Continental Congress, and then certainly I think most of the book takes place actually in 1776.
Mm-hmm.
But what I really enjoyed the most about this book, and although we all know that George Washington, you know, when you think of President Washington, you think of honor and integrity. What I enjoyed most is how he went into some examples of his honor and his integrity, you know, on a very personal or situational level. And where did he garner, you know, that honor and integrity? Because, you know, he did not come from a wealthy family. He was very rural. But that doesn't mean that because you're not wealthy that you don't have honor and integrity. But where was he taught that? Because I believe he was only 11 when his father died?
His father died when Washington was still a boy. I don't remember the exact
age.
Yeah, and
there was like five in the family or something, mm-hmm. and he right away had to go. You know, I mean, I don't know. I just found it interesting that Metzger kind of showed how that developed and why it was important. And what a great mentor that Lawrence was.
He kind of took, and I never quite got the connection here in the family, because Lawrence was an older half-brother, a different mother.
Yes.
Than George Washington. When his father saw, you know, his father must have been married before.
Yes.
And then Lawrence was born, and then what happened to the first mother? I never said, at least that I don't remember it.
I was thinking that the first wife died, but I don't know.
Well, at any rate, George Washington's father obviously remarried and had several more children, but this Lawrence, the older half-brother, was considerably older than George, and he was... You got to keep in mind now, this is in the middle of the 1700s. And there was no United States of America. You know, we were a British colony. His older brother...
Yeah, you're looking at 1752.
His older brother was born in London, and he was an officer in the British Army, and well-respected, fairly wealthy. He's the guy that had Mount Vernon originally.
Exactly, yes.
And Washington looked up to him. And since George Washington didn't have a father from age 11 on, Lawrence kind of took him under his wing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lawrence suddenly died of tuberculosis.
He did. And I think that, if I remember correctly, in the book, how it's written that he suddenly lost two important people in his life. Certainly his father when he was 11, his father died suddenly. I can't remember whether it was a heart attack. I don't know. But then, two, I don't know how they would know it was a heart attack, because they don't have and didn't have, you know, the medications or the tests or I don't know if they did autopsies. And,
yeah, they would have been kind of guessing.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Maybe based on if they researched how he passed away, there may be a fair assumption that that's what he died of. But not only did he die, but then his half-brother dying very suddenly too. So there were two very important people in his life, and that he pretty much felt alone. You know, and I thought, you know, these are the kind of things, you know, in reading this now, you know, whether Metzger put, you know, a little spin and threw the emotion in there, you know, I don't know. But, you know, that was the part of the book, I think, that I enjoyed the most, learning on these situations and, okay, how he responded maybe to certain situations. Even the whole way through it, you know, and with his army and the different, and how he kind of always kept his cool. You know, I mean, and how the men respected him. But then that always goes back to that honor and that integrity that was instilled in him.
The book is very much about Washington is probably only less than half, maybe a third of it, about this plot. But,
yes.
You know, you learn a lot about Washington's early years. And, of course, here in our area, we know a little bit about Washington's early years because he came through what is now Butler County when he was only in his 20s, mid-20s, I believe.
1753.
Came up to try to kick out the French on the orders of the governor of Virginia. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have the Washington's Trail through
exactly.
Butler County up to Fort LaBeouf, I think, and then back down again. So this was in the... prior to the French and Indian War, which came just a short time later. So when you jump ahead to 1775, Lexington and Concord, and yes, that was 1775, keep in mind, when the American Revolutionary War started, even though the Declaration of Independence didn't come until a little more than a year later.
Correct.
Lexington and Concord were in April of 1775, Declaration of Independence, of course, in July of 1776. But the Continental Congress had already appointed George Washington as Commander-in-Chief. There was kind of a ragtag militia in Massachusetts, which is where the early fighting was, the early rebellion. And the Continental Congress appointed, you know, they were looking for somebody who would be a unifying force. Here's this guy from Virginia who had some military experience in Western Pennsylvania.
I found it interesting how it was depicted. You know, him going to Philadelphia. I think he went the first year, the first time the Continental Congress met. He was a delegate from Virginia that went. And then, you know, the second time that he goes. Well, the first time he went in uniform. He went in military uniform, George Washington did. And the second time, I don't think he was in uniform. But I found it interesting, and I did not have time to actually research the accuracy of it, but I would hope that the author found traces of this somewhere, because I found this most impressive, that when they were voting... when the Continental Congress was voting on who was going to lead this new army, you know, everybody put down names and they were going to vote on it. And it ended up being unanimous to George Washington. And whenever they went to find him or went to tell him, he was nowhere to be found. They literally had to go find him somewhere. I forget now where they found him. But once he learned that his name was on that list, he felt it was not appropriate for him to be in that room to even influence or do whatever. So he left the premise. And I thought, you know, for some reason, you know, that spoke to me. I mean, really what type of person that he was. Hoping, of course, that that indeed did happen.
There were political machinations even back in those days before the Declaration of Independence. Yeah. One reason why Washington was appointed commander-in-chief of this ragtag scattered militia was not only because he had some military experience, but also because he was from Virginia. And the early rebellion was only in Massachusetts.
Yes.
Members of the Continental Congress, Virginia was by far the wealthiest colony at that time, and they thought, well, maybe we can get Virginians involved here if we appoint somebody from Virginia as commander-in-chief, which I found interesting. Politics even then, back in 1775.
Well, yeah, and I think sometimes we have a tendency to forget that, you know, with especially with our environment today, and that a good portion, you know, of the country may not be pleased or happy with what's going on today with maybe be backstabbing or whatever it is. And we have a tendency to forget that, you know, that has always truly gone on. And that's where I think where we romanticize, you know, on our forefathers and everything. And they were certainly honorable and with integrity and whatnot. But there still was grand schemes that went on. There was still politics as usual, because everybody was, you know, out to win. Everybody was out to have things their way. And so we have a tendency, I think, sometimes to forget that.
We're talking about this month's book talk selection. It's a book called The First Conspiracy by Brad Meltzer, who's an award-winning novelist. He's written, I don't know, 9 or 10 best-selling novels. This is his first work of nonfiction. And he teamed up with the TV documentary guy Josh Minch to write this book, The First Conspiracy. It's a fascinating. You have to have the same edition as I do, because it was just published in January of this year. It's a brand new book. But there's an interesting depiction of one of the portraits of George Washington with the lower part of his face covered up. All you can see are his eyes and his forehead. And it looks kind of spooky, and that's, of course, what they're trying to...
You can tell he's not smiling.
Yeah, well, we have no pictures of George Washington, of course. The photography had not been invented yet. All we have are portraits, a number of portraits of him by artists. That was the only thing we had back in those days. Anyway, The First Conspiracy, published in January of this year, so it's a pretty new book. I guess... pretty popular at this stage of the game. I don't know. Are people checking it out of the library? Or have you just gotten it in?
Well, no. I've had it probably, I know, in our collection at North Trails. When did it? January, February, whenever. Mm-hmm. Because that's whenever I had first read it. And it goes frequently. Of course, any book, whenever it is first published and because it is new, it sometimes has a tendency to check out more frequently because people want to know what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't looked lately to see if the checkout flow on it has slowed down any or not.
We'll take a break, and we'll be back to talk more about The First Conspiracy here on Book Talk on the It's Your Turn program on this Monday. We will be right back.
You've lost a loved one. You feel alone. You think that no one really understands just how you feel, that it affects everything in your life every single day. Well, Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler offers a unique, sensitive program called Someone's Caring. It's carefully designed to help ease your pain and helps fill in the gaps when you feel so lonely. Men and women are invited to attend. Yes, more men are beginning to realize it's okay to express their feelings in a small group setting. They're finding it really helps. Over the last 20 years, we've developed a program that has helped so many people work through their grief. We offer 5 programs: a grief support group for those who have lost a loved one, for survivors of a suicide, for bereaved parents, and for those who have lost a pet, and individual sessions. Our own trained bereavement specialist, Robin S. Miller, personally conducts the sessions. Call us at Thompson Miller, 724-287-3706, 287-3706. We can help. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Welcome back. Kathy Klein is with us today. It's a book talk day here on It's Your Turn. Nice to have you with us as well. We're talking about The First Conspiracy. It's a brand new book published just a few months ago. The Secret Plot to Kill George Washington. That's what they have as the subtitle. Actually, it was a plot perhaps to kill or perhaps to kidnap. It never came about, of course. This is kind of like reading about the Titanic.
Yes.
You know, when you... everybody knows what the ending is, but there's still been a couple of good books and a couple of good movies about it, you know, if you do it well, even though people know what's going to happen at the end. Obviously, George Washington was not assassinated. I don't know. Even that word... When I think of a presidential assassination, I think of, you know, John Wilkes Booth or Lee Harvey Oswald, or, you know, somebody with a gun or a rifle, and, you know, they're shooting a president, horrible as that is. Unfortunately, it's happened many times in our country's history, sometimes unsuccessfully, but many attempts. But I think of that as something different than, you know, well, let's see if we can kidnap George Washington, you know, before he... This is more than 10 years before he was president. It was more than 10 years before the establishment of the United States, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. However, I guess I also thought that, you know, this is a man, as we said earlier, with honor, integrity, a personality that men followed, respected him. And I do think that the governor of New York truly despised him. He truly did see him as an enemy. You know, he was, because he actually, George Washington ended up, you know, marching eventually into New York and setting up camp.
Mm-hmm.
And he, in fact, he was so intimidated by him that, you know, Governor Tryon went and he did, had his office set up on a ship off the shoreline. He was not even on the same ground as George Washington.
Well, we have to keep in mind that, you know, we hear the governor of New York, we think of, you know, Cuomo or whatever. It was a British governor at that time.
Yes.
It was just a colony. Governor Tryon was a Tory, and he was very much loyal to the British cause. That's something else that we tend to forget. I mean, you know, the people who lived in what within the 13 colonies were sharply divided. You know, even the Declaration of Independence among the members of Continental Congress almost didn't pass.
Exactly.
You know, we look back on that, we say, well, it was, you know, why did they even vote? You know, obviously they were going to do it. No, they weren't.
No, it was not smooth sailing.
They had to make a compromise on slavery to get the votes of the southern colonies, or else there wouldn't have been a Declaration of Independence.
Right, and what now, unless I read it so quickly and skimmed through it, but Governor Tryon, he was a governor of North Carolina prior to going to New York. He was from 1765 to 1770 or something like that. He was the governor of North Carolina, and then he pops up as the governor of New York. And I'm not quite, I don't remember how he went from North Carolina to New York.
Well, they weren't elected. I mean, they were appointed by King George, you know, the British crown.
He transferred him, obviously, then from North Carolina mm-hmm. to New York.
The mayor of New York City at the time of this, when this book takes place, this story takes place, was also a Britisher, a Tory. His name was David Matthews. I'd never even heard of his name before, but he was the mayor of New York City, and he was what they termed a loyalist. He was, you know, very much loyal to the British cause. And even in New England, where the rebellion started, there was a split. You know, there were some people that were happy with the way things were. There were others who were not. And it was by no means a unanimous and popular rebellion when it started.
No, I would have to think, you know, human nature, there were those who just didn't want change. No, because there's a lot of people, they don't like change. They don't want change. Mm. It's scary to them.
Make sure you don't get too far from that microphone there. That'll keep my engineer happy. That's good. just a brief recap of the early stages of the American Revolutionary War. We had Lexington and Concord and Paul Revere and all of that stuff in the spring. Early spring, actually, of 1775. And then eventually Washington was appointed commander-in-chief of these ragtag militia groups in Massachusetts. And Washington occupied Boston.
He did.
That was the first
assignment.
It was the first real accomplishment of the what became known as the Continental Army. They took Boston, and of course in Boston we'd had the Tea Party and all the other stuff. Mm-hmm. But that was it. After they took Boston, Washington moved his army to New York, knowing that the British were going to counterattack. They were going to come into New York Harbor and you know, try to kick him out of there, but that was his next move. And it was when he moved to New York that this conspiracy emerged, as you mentioned, from the governor of New York, William Tryon, and the New York City mayor, David Matthews. Washington had bodyguards Which I'd never read about before either.
He I didn't either.
Appointed them whenever he became commander-in-chief. Makes sense. He called them the lifeguards.
Lifeguards.
Kind of chuckled at that. That this is obviously long before the Secret Service. He called them lifeguards. And it was a couple of guys among these lifeguards who went south, you know, and were involved in this conspiracy to perhaps either kidnap. One of the thoughts was they could kidnap George Washington and deliver him to the British general in New York City. His name was William Howe, as I recall. Yeah. I do remember reading about that when I was in high school history class. But there was two of them, I believe, two of his lifeguards who turned traitors.
There were two of them. Well, we have to remember, too, that when we say, you know, Washington's army, it was not this big army. He was literally pulling men from countrysides and trying to whip them into shape. And a lot of them had no discipline. He found that most irritating because they did not have the discipline that he expected from his army. But also, one of the things that I thought was quite prevalent through many of the chapters was the fact that the governor, Governor Tryon, you know, he was wealthy. So he had money. He could buy the loyalty of some of these soldiers, these army men that were coming. And I think that's what happened with the lifeguards, too. I mean, he had people planted within, you know, New York. That's what he paid them to do, was to go out and find those who, you know, they could count on to, you know, become loyalists.
Well, there were also people who were living in New York. They weren't members of the military. They were just residents of New York City who were very sympathetic to the British cause. They didn't want anything to do with this rebellion. And so there were plots, you know, where they would get these people together. And they were, at one time, there was a plot to set fire to New York City. Remember reading about that?
Yes.
There were nine different spots they'd picked out where they were going to start fires and blow up ammo depots and powder kegs and that sort of thing because the American Army had moved into a part of New York.
Yeah, they occupied New York, and not a lot of people were happy with that because they came in. Certainly, they needed to have shelter. They needed to have food. So they occupied, and they pretty much, I don't know if they took what they needed, but that's typically the way it would go.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm sure there were a lot of people that were not happy, and certainly it would affect a lot of people's livelihood, their trades, how they made their money. And so I would see that, especially with the family that was struggling for money, that if someone came and, you know, they knew that they were having trouble, that you have to put food on the table or provide for your family. So they would, especially if they were kind of standing in the middle, didn't know, you know, if they wanted this revolution or whether they didn't want this revolution, you know, they could walk that line. And so I think probably more of that happened than what we realized.
Washington heard some of these rumors that were floating around about conspirators and turncoats, and he actually helped to set up this committee. It was called the Committee on Conspirators. It had a very strange name.
It was an odd twist of words.
Counterintelligence Group is what it was.
That's basically what it was, yes.
Washington was trying to figure out, you know, just what was true and what wasn't. And it was this committee that actually turned up the evidence against Thomas Hickey.
Yes.
And put him on trial, and eventually he was hanged. But again, he was not charged with attempting to either kidnap or kill George Washington. He was charged with counterfeiting, first of all.
Yes.
And then he apparently got to talking among some of the other inmates that he was in prison with. and ended up being charged with, planning to help the enemy. Sedition is the official term.
And that certainly was a handed down by George Washington himself. The hanging. And it seems to me I remember reading that he really wanted to use it as an example, that things he would tolerate and things that he wouldn't tolerate. So that's pretty much what happened to Mr. Hickey.
He was the first member of the military, the Continental Army, to be executed.
Yes. And I don't know if it was this book or if it was a previous book or something else that I read, but I remember reading that he was really used as an example of with this new army, what would be tolerated and what wouldn't be tolerated.
The British did, in fact, drive Washington and his fledgling Continental Army out of New York at the Battle of Brooklyn Heights and some other things, and the British...
They really thought they had him cornered, didn't they?
Well, he managed to escape. That's another story. But
got
some boats, and they got across the river, and most of the army got out. And so the British then occupied New York.
Yeah.
So the Continental Army had taken Boston. The British occupied New York. And then, of course, we had Washington moving his army down to Valley Forge, and that's when it looked particularly grim.
Yes, it did.
Because they'd been defeated in New York. They were in a bitterly cold winter at Valley Forge and had soldiers dying and no food. And didn't look real good at that point.
No, it did not. Well, and it was that move out of New York when they were going further south, which is, I guess, another example that I like that Meltzer put in this story. Once again, I'm hoping that there's a semblance of truth to it. I don't know, maybe I'm putting George Washington too much on a pedestal, but I like the fact that he said whenever, you know, they were loading the men up in the boats and leaving New York, that George Washington made sure that all of his men went first and that he, you know, kind of brought up the rear. I would hope that that would be true. I think that's what a good leader would do, to make sure that your men are, you know, safe first.
The Committee on Conspiracies. I was looking for the name of that group that had been appointed in New York. This is top secret team of civilians. The Committee on the Conspiracies. And their mission was to gather information about the loyalists and the enemy and so on and so forth. The leader of that committee was John Jay, who later would become the first Supreme Court Justice of the United States. These guys had a lot of... they were coming of age at this time. Another one was Alexander Hamilton.
Yes.
He was a young guy in the Continental Army that caught the eye of George Washington. And as Meltzer points out in his book, Washington felt a kinship with Alexander Hamilton because he learned that he, was an orphan person as well. And with Washington losing his father at an early age, he just,
they kind of gravitated toward one another.
Felt sympathy, so he kept his eye on him. And, of course, later on, Alexander Hamilton would play a key role in the founding of the nation. But Washington spotted him in the Continental Army at this time, 1776. It's interesting to write a whole book, and this is a long book. It's like 400 pages long.
Yes.
Mainly about 1 year.
1776.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the 1776 prior to the 1776 that we would learn certain information and facts in school that you don't think about sometimes the nitty-gritty and the detail of everything that has gone on prior to, like, that big event, prior to Valley Forge, prior to the Boston Tea Party. And I really never gave it a thought as to how George Washington became, you know, the first general of our army. I just never gave it a thought.
What did you think about the writing style of Brad Meltzer's the big letter, the big print on the front cover of the book, and then in smaller print, and to Josh Mintz. So I'm assuming that Meltzer is the prime author. I don't know. I thought it was dumbed down a little bit, to be honest with you.
I think that it was, but it's that dumbing down that I think in this case I enjoyed, because it kept the time frames moving forward. And what I really liked about it, and certainly I haven't been in the state of New York for a good number of years, but what I really liked about it is every now and then he would put in a sentence or two that says, okay, this is what's here today. So that I never really lost my bearings too much as far as, you know, geographically where things were happening. I enjoyed that much of it. I did enjoy, the chapters are very short because you would go from chapter to chapter.
Some of them are only 2 pages long.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And from chapter to chapter, and then the story has moved on, and that you may have gone from that happening, and it could be 6 weeks later. So I enjoyed that part of it, but I agree with you. I think it was dumbed down. It's not a...
It's not a scholarly history.
No, it is not.
He makes it read like a novel. All the short sentences gets... I don't know. It gets a little bit melodramatic for my taste at times, like almost like it's a television serial, you know, where I can't wait for the next chapter.
I don't know. Maybe it will be, David.
I suppose it could be. On the History
It's only been out 6 months, you know. Yeah. Yeah, I do. I mean, I do. He probably did that in order, you know, because that's what our readers look for now. You know, they will look for. And I found that a lot of our books that... have become most popular are books that have short chapters, that you might have only 4 or 5 chapters that may be lengthy till you get to the real, you know, height of the story, but the other chapters may only run 3 or 4 pages long. I just finished a book that was written that way, and you're moving along and you're reading, and then all of a sudden, boom, that's where the writer wants you to be, so then he elaborates on that, you know. So I kind of enjoy that, because you're not having to read and to meander through a lot of narrative and description, you know, setting up the scene. Who was it that I remember reading? James Michener. James Michener was, you know, very popular for that. He would... set the stage. It may take him 3 chapters to set the stage and to move things along.
His books were long.
They were.
I found this book to be repetitious at times, though. It's like I'd be reading. I said, wait a minute, I already read about this 50 pages ago, you know?
I don't remember that aspect of it. But now I didn't sit down and read it in one sitting either.
It'd be a long sitting.
It would be, yeah. Because
I mean, it's a quick read because it's short sentences, and you know, it's not real scholarly, but it's a long book.
Yeah. Well, I did. I guess I enjoyed it because of the shortness, the quickness, and he did not pull in a lot of the other history. I think that he stayed true to what it was that he wanted to share. Like I said, I hope that some of that he wrote. Certainly, the research is there to back it up. Did he elaborate? Did he, you know, embellish a few things? I would think probably so, because it would make better reading. Because most people now do not have the patience, literally, to sit down and read a very dry history book. That's the word that is used most often whenever you're reading history. People will, you know, what do you, well, I like to read history, so let's go to the history. No, those are too dry. They like to read the history, but they like to read it in a novel form. But they want to know that the information that they're reading is accurate information.
Well, we'll see whether there's a reaction to this from historical scholars or something, what they have to say. It's a brand new book, so not a whole
lot. It's not had a lot of time be on the market and to get scholarly reviews. We'll see.
We'll take a break. We'll be back to talk more about The First Conspiracy, a new book published in January of this year by Brad Meltzer and Josh Mintz. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be back right after these words. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. As we mentioned earlier, although part of this book, I would say a third maybe, is about this conspiracy. You learn a lot about George Washington. You learn a lot about the early stages, the first year, year and a half of the War of Independence, the American Revolutionary War, in this book. When it was determined that there were a couple of soldiers in Washington's life guards who had turned a traitor, they were tried, as we say, one of them, Tom Hickey, was executed. He was hanged, and there's no doubt that this happened. Some question in the minds of some, myself included, as to how much Brad Meltzer has expanded on this in terms of speculation and so on and so forth. But we'll see. It's certainly a fascinating story, that's for sure. I also thought it a bit of a stretch when they talk about this as being, Washington laid the groundwork for what became the CIA. Well, that's a little bit of a stretch. I mean, there were spies in wars long before the American Revolution, wars in other parts of the world. Everybody had spies.
Yeah, I think they were just maybe the terminology and, what we call today, because really the counterintelligence and everything, it always went on.
Sure.
I mean,
you're back in, as far back in history as you want to go. It would have been primitive compared to today's, but to say it was the forerunner of the CIA, heck, we didn't even have a CIA until after World War II. I mean, it was called the OSS during World War II.
Yeah. Did he not compare it at one time to, what was the group? Is it the Pinkerton Agency? Is that the one that was around the Civil War that was guards and...
Well, the Pinkertons were brought in to quell labor unrest and early labor unions and steel mills and so on.
Yeah. Well, he compared, I don't remember exactly in what chapter, but he talked about them not in detail, but just as a comparison. And I wasn't familiar enough with their history to know, if that was a valid comparison or not. But I enjoyed the book. I think it showed a lot of the leadership abilities of George Washington, how he handled himself, with the men, and that I remember reading him saying that his brother Lawrence on honor and integrity were most important in life, because you can take that with you anywhere that you go. And that is just so true. And I think that is something that all leaders, whether they are, past, current, or future, need to remember, the honor and the integrity. And any time I know when I think of George Washington, those two words always come to my mind, honor and integrity.
I cannot tell a lie. I chopped down the cherry tree. total fable, of course.
Yes, yes.
Never happened.
Yes.
There are some who suggest that the reason that we have not heard about this or a lot about this is because it was espionage, after all. I mean, it was early and primitive spying, but it was espionage. And some say, well, that's why there's no actual record of, you know, for example, Thomas Hickey being charged with trying to kidnap or assassinate George Washington, because they covered this up. You know, they didn't want it to become public knowledge.
They didn't write everything down. They didn't have laptops then.
Really?
They did not. And look all that was accomplished without those laptops. Yeah, he does elaborate a little bit, I think, on that. And I agree with you on that, where he obviously could not find any documentation on certain things. And that's where I said, well, I think he was, as far as wanting to connect the dots, probably to make the pages a little more fluent. So I think he probably took some liberty at, no pun intended, but in trying to connect those dots, you know, to make the pages flow. And there were several times when he talks about speculating, because after all, they didn't write anything down. It was word of mouth and, you know, memorizing things.
Well, it makes for an interesting read. I'll grant you that. And it's an easy read, even though it's a long book. But I tend to think that if I'm relying, you know, with more certainty on some of this stuff, I'll go with the David McCullough or, you know, Doris Kearns Goodwin or someone like that, who's a, you know, a trusted historian as opposed to a novelist. And part of it is the way that Meltzer has written the book, because it reads like a novel sometimes, much of the time. And I guess he did that to make it interesting.
Well, like I said, too, I know there is a large segment of our readers out there that is what they're looking for. They do enjoy reading about history. They do not necessarily enjoy reading the cut and dry, just the facts. They want it woven into a story with the true facts.
Well, historical fiction even is very popular. Yes. Genre these days. Was it John Jakes? They wrote a whole series of
books. Oh, that was the Bicentennial
books.
Series, yes.
It was like, I don't know, 10 or 12 books, wasn't it? Maybe more than that, I don't know. I never read any of them.
I believe that particular true series finished with 8. It was supposed to be 6, but he expanded it. It ended up being 8. Mm-hmm. And that particular series started actually in France, with the Philippe family, I believe. And he has them migrating to the colonies. And through the years, you know, you're running into all of our historical figures, from Benjamin Franklin to John Adams to, you know, and it was fun reading. He even gave them dialogue, which there again, that is your writer's.
Well, that's pure speculation,
exactly,
obviously.
Exactly, exactly. You know, but it's fun reading, because it's like, oh, yeah, I forget. They probably did speak, you know, but when we learn about our forefathers and stuff, you know, I think we do put them on pedestals, you know, which, whether it be right or wrong, but we forget that they were people, they had dialogue, they did things, just normal things, the same way that we do today. And that's what made that series so fun.
We need one more break. We'll do that, and we'll be back to wrap up our conversation here on the Book Talk edition of It's Your Turn on this Monday, back right after these words.
Thinking about remodeling or refinancing your home? ARMCO Credit Union's new HELOC combines the flexibility of a traditional home equity line of credit with the low fixed rate of a home equity loan. Lock in different amounts, rates, and terms up to 20 years under one convenient loan agreement and monthly payment without the hassle of reapplying as your borrowing needs change. It's never been easier to join, so call or visit us at one of our locations or online at armcocu.com to become a member. ARMCO Credit Union is an equal housing lender and is federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome back, folks. The book that we've been discussing this month is entitled The First Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill George Washington, selected by North Trails Library. And here from North Trails with us today has been Kathy Klein. I wonder if these two will collaborate further, if this book becomes a big hit.
I haven't seen or heard anything that they're working on another book. Maybe it'll depend on how well this one goes.
I've always thought it would be difficult to collaborate with someone on a book. I mean, you know, what do you do? Say, okay, I'll write the first chapter, you write the second chapter, or, you know.
Well, it could very well have been, as I think you had mentioned earlier, that Meltzer being the novelist and then Mensch being the historian, because I noticed on the back of the book there's an awful lot of credit in the bibliography that is to the Historical Society of the State of New York. So when you're going to, I would think, if it were me to collaborate and I wanted to put this book out and I wanted to make sure that my facts and everything were historically accurate, even though I'm going to novelize it, I would want my partner to be someone with the expertise, you know, in historical facts. I've never heard of this Josh Mentz before, so I'm only assuming until I find otherwise that that's kind of his forte is just historical facts and maybe an historian.
The book is The First Conspiracy. Hey, you just had a big deal at North Trails Library within the past few days, didn't you?
I did. Well, I should say the community did. We had a open house and dedication for a new community room that was completed in March, and we dedicated it to Billy Delich. He was a lifelong member of the community. He lost his life last fall, and we dedicated the room to him. There's property, his family property adjoins the libraries. So it was a dedication. It was an open house. It was to introduce Billy's room to the community for use. And it was certainly to kick off the summer, Annette, with our children and with their summer programs. And certainly it's so important for our kids to keep reading as much as they can through the summer because they don't want to experience what we call that summer slide where, you know, you leave third grade and when you go back to fourth grade, you kind of got to recap a little bit. So if you keep those skills up a little, you know, through the summer, there's not so much recapping when you go into fourth grade in the fall.
Some of our listeners may not know where North Trails Library is located, Kathy.
Oh, North Trails Public Library is located right on Route 308. You want to go past the town of West Sunbury, about a mile and a half up the road. And then if you keep going and you see the Montauk High School sits on your right-hand side.
You've gone too far.
You've gone too far. You got to turn around and you come back down about a mile and a half. So we're pretty much exactly right between the town of West Sunbury and Montauk High School.
Serving what was a very underserved area in terms of library services since you opened, what, 10 years ago?
2004 we opened the doors up there. Actually, that was the home of the book depository for the bookmobile. We pulled books out of there and, you know, stocked the bookmobile, and we ran out of there to 2011 till we lost the bookmobile with overhead expenses was just astronomical, especially the fuel as it was diesel. And but even with the bookmobile running, we would have people that would stop in and say, well, I missed a bookmobile. Can I come here? And we'd say, sure. So we've just been flipping that location since really probably about 2005, 2006. And it's been a natural, slow growth, but we are very pleased with the growth. And the community came out Saturday pretty much in full force in support of it, and we were very pleased. We had a fun day.
Well, that's just great to get to. A library to serve parts of northern Butler County.
Well, and what happens with that room is that it affords me the opportunity to do programming year-round for those communities. Before, I was contingent on Mother Nature. I have a lovely lot outside, but when the weather doesn't cooperate, programming is canceled, and certainly nothing goes on in the winter months. But I am happy to say we have a lining up program, and actually Tuesday we'll be having our first Lego time. We actually have room to spread out.
Well, I'll give you my copy, or the copy you loaned me of the first conspiracy back, and it'll be on the shelves of one of the public libraries in Butler County very soon, if you're interested, listeners, in checking it out. Kathy Klein, good to see you today. Thanks for stopping down.
Always a pleasure to be here, David. Thank you.
Sure. That wraps up our program for today. Hope you can be with us tomorrow for the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 1230 to 130, right here on WISR 680. The sun.